This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to the podcast of The Petri Dish on Joy 94.9.
Petri dish, noun. A small, shallow dish of thin glass or plastic with a loose cover used especially for cultures in bacteriology. Petri dish.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 and you're here with the Petri Dish, a new show here on Joy talking about science.
We're going to bring science to the people, make it fun and exciting.
Yes, that's right. Sorry, I just had a bit of a cough there. And it's going to be fun, exciting, and we're going to...
What are we going to talk about today?
Today we're going to talk about evolution.
Evolution, but we're going to do it in a really exciting way. We're not going to bring you the age-old debate, you know, God or dinosaurs or...
Yeah, we're going to approach this from a scientific point of view.
And from an exciting point of view, we're going to be busting myths like whether dinosaurs are really extinct. And we're going to be talking about science news, new things that have been found in the world. What else are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about a very controversial topic in the creationist world and the scientific world is where do humans come from? And I'm just talking about mummy, where did it come from? And
It's a stork, right?
I thought it was a cabbage patch.
We're also going to be, we have a segment called Remember This and things you learned in high school but have probably long since forgotten. Things like who was Lucy and what were the Neanderthals?
Yeah, it's going to go a bit of a human history track. And we're also going to talk about a movie called Evolution.
A movie called, that's right.
Yeah, so we're going every week, Wendy and I will be talking about really bad
sci-fi movies.
Bad or good sci-fi movies. Asking a question, can it really happen?
Could it really happen? That's right. And so today we're going to talk about David Duchovny's Evolution. And if you haven't seen it, then we're going to ruin the ending for you pretty much.
You're on Joy 94.9 with a Petri Dish, Joy's new science show, 10 p.m. on Tuesdays as you're listening right now.
And right now, we're going to be talking about science news up to date. What's been happening in the science world?
I don't know. You tell me, Wendy.
All right, I will. Since you asked. We've got stinging news. A historical wasp viral infection has gotten its way into caterpillars' DNA, and this protects wasp eggs, says a study from the National Centre for Scientific Research in France. So wasps lay their eggs inside the caterpillars, and they can do this because millions of years ago, ancient wasps put virus-like particles in the eggs. So these virus particles disable the caterpillar's immune system, meaning the caterpillar can't attack the wasp eggs.
Now, I want to know, do the virus find the wasp or the wasp find the virus?
No, the virus found the wasp and then the wasp found the caterpillar.
Yeah, are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm sure about that. Why not?
Are you sure there's not some giant virus out there? Okay, I'm being silly now. Move on.
Next week. 2008 was a cool year, temperature-wise. Climatologists from NASA in New York City found that 2008 was the coldest year since 2000. But don't get too excited, because the report also found that 2008 was still pretty damn hot. It was the ninth warmest year on record since 1880. So the cool climate was probably caused by a strong La Niña that was around in the first half of the year. Did you notice that it was...
Yeah, I did notice a bit cool in the beginning of the year, but I also noticed it was also kind of a warm winter and a cold summer. It's kind of like we're reversing our...
That's true, actually. It was. Well, La Niña and El Niño are opposite stages in a natural fluctuation in the Pacific Ocean temperatures. So La Niña is the cool phase and El Niño is the warmer phase, and they typically follow within 2 years of each other.
But nowadays, it's probably more El Niño more than La Niña these days.
Well, this is the fluctuation when people say, I don't believe in climate change. They're like, it's just a natural fluctuation, El Niño, El Niña.
Because Australia's been experiencing El Niño because of the drought, because if there was La Niña, we'll have...
That's right. And you'll notice that El Niño is the male version.
The destructive one.
The destructive and warmer one. And La Niña is the cool phase. Who do you reckon came up with those?
An ice queen and a nice hot guy. I know some very bitter man.
That's all I'm saying. Now, and why lizards don't get their spots is what I'm calling the next one. Young male lizards have been found to pretend to be women in order to mate. This is a new Australian study from the Australian National University and the University of Queensland. So according to the study, young male Arugabi flat lizards hide their colours to imitate the plain brown females. So in this system, adult males are extremely colourful. In fact, one of the most colourful lizards in the world. But they're also extremely territorial, and the females are plain brown. Now, young males start off brown, but then develop their colours, but they first develop their colours on their belly. So from the outside, they still look like the men. And what they can do is they can sneak in looking all brown and female, and then they get the women and mate.
Okay. I thought it was the other way around. I thought the young males are trying to have sex with other males.
No, but the older males get confused because they just see this brown and they're like, hot mama, lizard. They go for it. But then when they get close, they can smell that it's a male. So it's just like a visual deception. Again. So that's our science news. That was news that just came out today about those lizards. So get excited. Aussie research.
That's new and fresh. But, you know, I always find it really weird that males in the animal world are always the colourful and pretty ones. And they're the ones that have to attract the female in this giant extravaganza.
Well, yeah, because we're just happy doing our own thing. But it's you guys that are flouncing around.
And then in the human world, it's the girls who have to dress up. It's weird. But we're talking more about the influence of females later anyway.
We are too. We will. So get excited and keep listening. This is the Petri Dish.
You're going to tell us about a myth that really dinosaurs are dead? I'm pretty sure they're dead, Wendy.
Yeah, you would. You would, Shane. So this myth, sticking with the evolution theme, is that dinosaurs are extinct. So for a long time, watching a lot of Fantasia, you might have thought this was the truth. But in fact, lies. Lies in the media, we call this. Birds are actually descendants from the dinosaurs. And so when there was a mass extinction 65 million years ago, birds survived. And our current birds that we have are direct descendants.
So bird is the word. Is that what you're trying to tell me, Wendy?
Bird is the word. That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. And it actually is a bit of a controversy because it's often thought that dinosaurs all died because there was a big asteroid that hit the Earth and trouble struck from that. And there's a big question out there. Well, how did these guys survive? How did birds make it?
How did they make it?
Well, we don't know. And it's what's put a big question mark over the meteorite theory. And it's made some scientists believe that actually climate change caused the dinosaur extinction. And because birds had evolved to be up in the trees, for some reason, obviously the heat still got to them. Hot air rises for one, but something about that they weren't so affected by the climate change because of the food that they ate.
Yeah, and because also creatures were getting smaller and smaller at this time. So birds, obviously, they eat very small things as well. So they could have adapted to that as well.
That's right. So that's what's the current theory, but it's definitely the case. Dinosaurs not extinct. Now, it's quite interesting. So for a long time, everyone's like, asteroid came, trouble struck. Mm. And then these guys from Princeton, these crazy scientists, had this whole new theory. And they thought that they thought the asteroid hit in Mexico.
Yeah.
And they had this giant asteroid that they were...
Now, was the world still Gondwana land or Pangaea at this time? Or has everything separated?
No, I don't think anything had separated 65 million years ago.
Yeah, things would still have been joined, hypothetically.
And Princeton scientists had a look at the crater and they thought it was too old to have killed off the dinosaurs. They dated it further back than 65 million years ago.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what put a bit of a spin on the asteroid theory.
So could that have killed the earlier dinosaurs when the crocodiles and alligators were around? Was they still around? Because they're very ancient animals, even older than birds.
Yes, but the crocodiles we have today are not descendants from the crocodile-esque figures that were around during dinosaur times. Really? So avian birds are really the only creatures.
So crocodiles, because I've always seen you just taught me something. I always thought crocodiles were direct descendants, because we always hear about in the media that crocodiles are the longest living thing on Earth because they've survived generations and generations.
No.
So it's all birds are prehistoric dinosaurs.
That's right. So next time you see a pigeon, you don't look down on that. Just think of the T-Rex and think of the pigeon and which one survived.
T-Rex equals pigeon. Well, I guess the raptor, you know, I've heard raptor is also related to the turkey.
Really?
Yes. Raptors, even though in Jurassic Park, they depict them as, you know, these big giant meat eaters. They actually
were... And they could open the doors.
They're actually the size of turkeys.
The size of turkeys?
Yeah.
That's really...
Around the size of a turkey.
Wow.
The bird is the word. They're the prehistoric ones on the earth. You're enjoying 4.9 with a Petri Dish?
At the moment, we're going to be talking about a science controversy in this segment. We're going to be debunking... No more debunking. We've debunked.
We've debunked. We debunked a myth.
We have.
Well, I thought we'd take a little different tract here. Because we could have gone for the easy option about creationism versus evolution.
Scientology.
So I thought I'd go with a professor called Brian Sykes, who published a book called The Seven Daughters of Eve. Yeah, so you're asking yourself, Seven Daughters of Eve, as in Adam and Eve? Yes, as in Adam and Eve. So daughters. Seven Daughters of Eve explains where all Europeans, so not everyone on Earth, but where all Europeans descend from. So Caucasian people, so people from America, Australia, well, Caucasian people in Australia, and obviously around Europe and around the world.
So where do we come from?
Let's talk about the science behind this, how he worked this out.
Mm-hmm.
So in our bodies, we have our cells, as we all know. And within those cells, we have little powerhouses called mitochondria. So mitochondria originated billions of years ago as supposedly by one cell eating another cell. So mitochondria is in itself has its own DNA because of that reason.
And do any other cells in the body have their own DNA?
No, mitochondria is the only one that has its own DNA. And if your plant cell, your chloroplast will also have, so the things that make plants. So you have their, they have their own DNA, so they can replicate themselves. And it's a very, because the mitochondria itself is a very highly active part of the cell, it needs to have its own function. It produces its own proteins as well. It's to use
so
in producing energy.
So there's a
little
cell that's like a little person making proteins, yeah. Making its own DNA.
So the energy is called ATP. And when that has a phosphorus group in it, which splits up, and that gives us energy. And so that's the mitochondria that's responsible for that for happening.
So how does this tell us where we come from?
So this can tell us because mitochondrial DNA can only be transferred one way, and that's from mother to child. So it's actually quite a prehistoric part of DNA. It doesn't really mutate that much. It doesn't because it doesn't replicate as much as normal cells.
Right. And so it just gets transferred through the mum.
Yes, and that's because mitochondria is found in the egg, and mitochondria in the sperm is found on the tail, which breaks off, and it does not insert into the egg and fertilize it, creating the zygote. So we don't have the male's mitochondria, only the mother's.
Wow. And so what has Mr. Sykes done?
So Mr. Sykes has genetically tested thousands of participants around the world and have found these seven groups of women, seven specific types of mitochondrial DNA, which is called the seven daughters of Eve, and they're divided into, obviously, seven groups. And
so he's saying that every European descendant has come from seven women. Seven.
So one of these seven specific women. He's called them haplogroups. He's given them letters and also names. There's Ursula, who comes from Greece, and apparently 11% of all Caucasians come from this. Then we have Zanai, who's from southern Russia, and 6% of people come from this. Mm-hmm. Helena, from southern France, which is the majority of the Caucasian population, with 46%. Velda, from northern Spain, 5%. Tara, central Italy, 9%. And Katrine, which is the north side of Italy, 6%. And Jasmine, Middle East, which is 17%.
So all these different groups from Italy.
Yeah, so...
what's going on there?
And it also explains maybe a bit more where we came from, because it also kind of puts some kind of debunks out of Africa theory, where the theory of mitochondrial Eve, and that's tracing back the oldest woman, the first woman to have like a child, they trace it back to this woman in Kenya called mitochondrial Eve, which is about 100,000 years ago. It was about the time when humans started appearing.
Okay, so we used to think that we all came out of Africa, right?
So this explains, so this actually says that actually, no, we don't all come from Africa. At some point, we migrated out from a central place around the world, producing these different types of like mothers.
Why could we not have just come out of Africa and then like this African chick made seven babies?
In Brian Sykes' book, he actually explains that these mitochondrial DNA appeared at different points in time.
So isn't it possible that, say, this African mama had two kids and then generations and generations? So
it could be possible.
So why is it truly controversial?
Well, it's truly controversial, one, for the fact that no one really knows whether these seven groups are just the only seven groups, because there's some scientists now who are claiming there's up to 12 or 14 groups now. And, you know, mitochondrial DNA, I did say, doesn't mutate as much as humans' DNA, but it does still mutate. So there's actually more and more mutations, and they're asking, has he taken that into account? And there should be more than seven if that was the case. But, you know, he apparently has only found seven.
And so what does this mean for diseases? Does that mean that there's going to be a certain group that might be susceptible, the Ursulas versus the Helders?
There was a Helena.
Helena.
Well, I don't think it has any impact on diseases because, you know, mitochondria itself is just a powerhouse. So maybe mitochondrial-specific diseases. I'm not really too sure how I can answer that, because DNA, we all know, can affect how susceptible we are to diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mitochondrial DNA doesn't really affect that. It doesn't have that much of an impact on our overall phenotype, which is our appearance as a result from our genetics.
So this is where we come from. This is where all Europeans come from. So where is he next? What's he doing
well,
now?
Well, he's currently in Asia with the Japanese, which he's calling the nine clan mothers of Japan. So he's currently working...
So he reckons that there's nine clan mothers coming out of Japan, and in all of Europe, there's only seven descendants.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, Japan is quite a diverse country itself, and it has many different races in Japan as well. So he's going to trace back. So maybe with 7 plus 9, what's that, Wendy? 16? 16 different mothers around the world.
Can you believe that? Mitochondrial DNA.
As we were saying before, you know, women do matter. They pass on their lineage. Men, it gets lost.
That's right. So we have no idea who the blokes are in this equation. We don't even care.
There is the Y chromosomal atom, but that's a different theory, and I haven't researched much into that. But right. apparently you can search it, but it's only within the males, and that's not really an accurate depiction.
Cause yeah, that's right. Who wants to know
that? But at the same time, the Y chromosome is like mitochondrial DNA. It doesn't mutate that much. Because there's so little genes on it. But we're not talking about the men. The women are important. You know, International Women's Day is coming up as well, so it's a nice topic to talk about.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Shane, for taking us through this controversy. We're all coming from seven different mothers, or
if you're from European. Japan. No, if you're European. It's right. nine if you're from Japan.
Yeah.
So there you go. What do you think you are, Wendy?
Well, it's not being Ursula. I was never a fan. I reckon Helena.
You think you're from southern France?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you look like you're from southern France. You're listening to Joy 94.9. We like to call this segment, Remember This Scientific Fact, taking you all the way back to about year 10 science, maybe year 12 if you did it.
That's right. Maybe even year 7 sometimes. That's geeky little science teacher that wanted to make things really cool. That's what we are.
We're the young, hip science teacher. Hey, kids, you love science.
That's right. And so right now we're going to talk about remember who Lucy was.
Tell me about Lucy.
Lucy is the name for a fossil that has been dated back 3.5 million years ago. So they've found this fossil in Tanzania and they dated it. And Lucy, when she was found, she was thought to be a key in the link between modern humans and apes. And her genus, they've called it Australopithecus. It kind of sounds vaguely familiar. And Lucy could walk on 2 feet and she had hips and knees. That's how we know that she could walk because they've analysed these bones. But she had a very tiny brain and there's a little bit of confusion, or we just don't really know exactly which species Lucy was. So it's when you're classifying animals or things, it's genus is the umbrella term and then it's species. But after Lucy, then around 2 million years ago, or after Australopithecus, then we started getting Homo habilis. And we like to call this little dude a handyman because he had tools. Now he could create simple tools for hunting, and he's thought to be around 5 inches tall and weigh about 45 kilograms. From their teeth, we know that Homo habilis had meat in their diet.
Oh,
that's right. And again, talking about next week's show, we're going to be discussing
vegetarianism. So he started the omnivorousness of humans.
That's right. And so this, some people believe that because he started eating meat, we all started evolving into the fabulous humans that we are currently. And without this meat, we'd still be turkeys.
Let's think about this. If they started eating meat, some people wouldn't have been able to digest meat. And so
we're going to be talking about this next week. Okay.
But I'm just talking about the evolution of how it may have happened.
Homo habilis did survive. And Homo habilis then was advanced by Homo erectus. That's right. He came next, living between 1.8 million years ago. We had Homo erectus. And this guy, or girl, and girl, guessing.
Yes, guy and girl.
I had fairly large brain size, 900 to 1,200 cubic centimetres.
Wow.
Compared to the modern day person, which is 1,300 cubic centimetres. So, yeah, they're really getting to be more human-esque. And from the size of their brain, we know that they had the capacity for speech, and they also had a lot more sophisticated tools. So they could cook with fire and they had weapons and spears. Pretty clever cats, or apes, I should say. And then 500,000 years ago, we get Homo sapiens archaic, so a little bit more hairy than we are now. And then around 120,000 years ago, came around, and then there was us. So then the modern humans developed. Wow. And that is hopefully something you would have liked to remember. And now I can hear you saying, but what about the Neanderthals, Wendy?
Well, they're not really humans, were they? They were closely related, but they're not.
That's right. They lived in Europe and the Middle East around 150,000 years ago, and then they just died out, and we don't really know what happened. And
they actually had a bigger brain capacity than us. Well, they had a bigger frontal lobe than humans as well.
That's right. They had on average 100 cubic centimeters larger than the modern human brain. So
maybe modern humans killed out the Neanderthals.
That's likely, because Neanderthals were bigger and had a really heavy skeleton, and they believe stronger than the modern man, but maybe there was something about the weather conditions.
And the genetics. But, you know, 120,000 years ago is also about the age of mitochondrial Eve. You're listening to Joanna Fortnite.
This is the Petri dish.
Now we're going to talk about evolution.
We did. We watched that David Duchovny movie from start to finish. And you know why we did it? In order to complete this segment of our show, which is where we look at science fiction movies and think, could it really happen?
So evolution, let's talk about what is actually
about. Let's talk about the plot, because I don't think that many people would have seen it.
So evolution is a movie post X-Files days.
That's right, David Duchovny.
Made in about 2001, the year or two after X-Files actually ended. Then this movie Evolution came out, and it was about a meteor that lands on Earth. And it's the scientist named Ira, played by David Duchovny, and his co-scientist, Harry. And they find this rock in this cave, and it's oozing this liquid.
Okay, so meteor hits, and then it's oozing liquid.
Yes, it is.
So is it alive?
Well, they soon discover, they analyze it, and it's alive. So they analyze it, it's alive, and they notice that it's an alien because it has 6 base pairs instead of 4, which humans have. So humans,
what do you mean by base pairs?
So base pairs are the basic units of our genetics.
Okay, so our DNA is made of 4 base pairs. Yes, but 4. This alien had 6 base pairs.
Yes, and like, oh my god, it has to be an alien because it has 6 base pairs. And it didn't have a double helix. I think it had like a quadruple helix.
Whoa, okay. And then what happened?
And then these little creatures quickly evolve. And then in come the feds.
Really quickly evolve,
really
right?
Quickly. And the feds play one of the main characters, Julianne Moore, David Duchovny's, you know, love interest. And they find these creatures evolving really fast, first into little worms, and then into slowly bigger insects and these weird creatures, some of them similar to today's creatures.
Really? Okay, so what happens then?
Well, these animals start escaping the cave and they explore the outside, but they can't live in oxygen.
Okay, so they suffocate.
As soon as they breathe oxygen, they suffocate. Like, oh, well, well.
Oh, well, that's great. No problem. They can stay in the cave.
They can stay in the cave, but no, they can't.
Well, what happens?
Well, a few. Huge jump in evolution. So from little insects and little creatures in the water comes things like a gorilla, blue gorilla, which is meant to be like a human.
Wow.
That's a carnivore. So they're all carnivores, by the way.
So this is all evolved in real time in probably about 2 hours or something.
In real time, 2 hours. In their time, probably about in a week. And then this giant like dinosaur starts flying around, but it dies because it suffocates and then gives birth to something that's oxygen tolerant.
Whoa, okay, so now these giant dinosaurs, according to the movie Evolution, can survive in the oxygen. And how are we going to kill them? How are we going to get rid of them?
Exactly, that's what they ask. And well, this giant monster then appears after this fire happens in the cave. It evolves quickly.
Wait, so a fire happens in the cave. Yes. Everything evolves uber fast.
Yes.
All of a sudden, we have this giant, giant alien. Then the feds want to kill it. Let me guess, they want to use a nuke, don't
well,
they?
Well, the nuke is what they used to kill it, and that's what happened. It didn't kill it, it made it evolve. So I missed that part out.
Oh, right. Okay. So we've got quickly evolving. Feds are like, get this alien out of town. Mm. We're going to nuke it. The fire makes them evolve incredibly quickly. And then how does David Duchovny save the day?
Well, he's a professor and his deadbeat students figure out, hey, selenium might kill them. No, they figure out selenium will kill them. And they said Head and Shoulders has selenium so-and-so in it.
So why would selenium kill
Okay.
All right.
Because humans are a carbon-based being.
Okay, so we are mostly made of carbon.
Carbon, and if you go 2 down and 1 across, you get arsenic. And
on the periodic table.
On the periodic table, and that kills us. And if you go 2 down from nitrogen and 1 across, you get selenium.
Okay, so could it happen? Because arsenic kills us,
well, arsenic
could Head and Shoulders, which has a selenium in it, kill these creatures? Well, what do you think? Is this real?
The theory is, okay, this is my theory on the take on this movie, is that because it blocks a cycle within the mitochondria.
Okay.
And
you are just obsessed with mitochondria.
Yeah,
it's just me, mitochondria.
Arsenic replaces phosphorus, and so it stops the production of energy and kills us because we need our heart and brain needs that to continuously work.
Okay,
and
so that's how arsenic kills us.
So, now, if you look on the periodic table, sulfur is right above arsenic, and right above selenium is sulfur, because they do mention sulfur in the movie. So they use sulfur as energy, apparently, I think. And so
sulfur is above arsenic.
No, sulfur is above selenium.
Okay, phosphorus is above arsenic. Okay.
So I think their theory was that, well, they must use sulfur for energy. Maybe selenium will block that, and they're a dead alien. But it explodes. I don't think we explode when we take arsenic.
So you're actually believing this. You think that if we had nitrogen-based life forms that used...
Possibly.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe that the movie Evolution, you're saying you're, you know, bringing the fact to science fiction and you believe that Head and Shoulders could kill an alien life form.
Because,
good. Tell me why not.
Because arsenic can only kill us in its purest form.
Okay.
But if it's in a compound, it's relatively harmless. Arsenic used to be an antibiotic back in the day. It did not kill us. It actually killed a lot of bacteria.
It only made us stronger.
And selenium is a compound in Head and Shoulders. And if we actually took that amount of Head and Shoulders as that same alien did, then we would have died too. So there you go. There's a flaw in there.
All right. So, okay, we only die from pure arsenic, so they should only die from pure selenium. Mm. There wasn't pure selenium. There was other junk in that. Yeah. Head and shoulders, out of town. Get out of here.
Exactly.
Now, another question, could they evolve that fast? Could an alien really evolve from, like, tiny little cell to giant oxygen?
I think the quick breathing. Answer is no, because it takes, no matter how toxic your environment is, it will probably still take a few million years to get to that point.
Even if you have six... Would six space bears change it?
No. Or maybe. High mutation rate, probably.
High mutation, that's right.
But then you think they have a better correction thing going on.
That's right. Because when we mutate, there's certain parts of our body, of our DNA, that can fix it up quickly. So you would think that these aliens would have that too. So if they were mutating, they should be able to fix their DNA to prevent it mutating. And in effect prevent evolution happening so quickly, because evolution is a mutation, it's just a beneficial mutation.
Yeah, exactly.
So did we debunk that? Could this? I don't think you're convinced. I think I'm babies with evolution and David Duchovny.
I'm semi-convinced, but we're kind of running out of time here, so
all right, well, next week on this show we're going to be talking about food, and we're going to be looking at the Nutty Professor and a fat pill.
Yes, we are, and I hope you enjoyed this first episode of The Petri Dish.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of The Petri Dish. For more information and the latest science updates, you can check out the blog or more podcasts at joy.org.au/thepetridish.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.